Welcome back to the DFS Office Hours podcast. My name is Jordan, and this episode is a recording of an interview originally streamed live on YouTube on April 1st, 2022, with SaberSim founder Matt and data scientist Will. We dive deep into how SaberSim's MLB simulations work, walk through the benefit of using sims in your MLB DFS process, and discuss what is new to our MLB sims for this season. You can expect to see more of these interview-style, strategy-focused episodes at the start of each major sports season. I hope you enjoy. Welcome back, everybody. We are now less than a week away from the start of the 2022 MLB season. And to get you guys ready for the start of the season, I've brought Matt and Will back on stream today, who have been working hard for the past few weeks to get our baseball simulations and model ready for the start of the season. On today's stream, we're going to be talking about what is a baseball simulation, why the data that you get out of these sims is crucial to be successful playing MLB DFS in 22, and do a deep dive into the individual factors that go into our sims to show you how it all really works. So again, today we've got a lot to get through, so we'll jump right in just a moment. But before we get started, I will just mention one more time here that these shows are live for a reason. Please ask questions for us. If you have questions, you can pop them into the YouTube chat or the Office Hours channel in Slack, and we'll wrap around to some questions at the end. But let's go ahead and just dive right in. And I'm going to start here by asking you guys, what is a simulation? How is this different than the other ways of creating baseball projections?
Yeah, I can take that one. So a simulation basically means that rather than kind of like running a statistical model where all we're trying to do is predict the average fantasy point output, a simulation means that we're actually running these all of the games play by play. And essentially it's like, you know, playing a video game, but just like automated. And we just do that thousands of times. So, you know, we'll take the starting lineups for the teams. We'll take, you know, the park and all these different factors. And we'll start the game, you know, it starts 0-0, the top of the order is up, and we'll just go play by play. And we have all these inputs based on the different rates for all the batters and pitchers. And we do that and we finish the game and store all of the results. And then we do it again and we repeat thousands of times. So what we end up with is this full range of outcomes for every game, where it's not just the average projections, it's literally these are all thousands of different possible outcomes that could happen based on not just sort of each player's like average results, but their full like their variance, their standard deviation, all of these different factors that kind of combine together in this play-by-play simulation that ends in, you know, these thousands of different data points for each player and for each game.
Gotcha. Okay. So when somebody sees our projections, they go into the app for the first time and they see the projections kind of similar to what you may see elsewhere around the industry. What is the difference between that average projection that they're seeing on SaberSim versus, you know, if they've seen it somewhere else on some other site? What's the difference going on there?
Yes, that number, you know, it's sort of the meaning behind the number is the same as on SaberSim in another site, where we're saying, you know, this is the average projected result. The difference is on SaberSim, literally we take all those thousands of outcomes in the sims, and then we just take the average of them to create that projection number. But that's just kind of one number that's summarizing all of this data that we have at our disposal. And so there's a lot of different ways that you can take those thousands of data points and have more information on them. And so when you go on SaberSim and you see that projection number, that's the average, but then you can see the 25th percentile and the 50th percentile and the 95th percentile. And those are sort of different, you know, the percentiles are sort of like different points on this distribution, where the 95th is, you know, that's what the player is going to hit 5% of the time, you know, that top 5% of their possible outcomes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, even though that projection number sort of means the same thing on SaberSim as it does other places, how we're getting there is a lot different. And then what you can do with that data is also a lot different. And so, you know, so you're kind of doing yourself a disservice on SaberSim if you're just looking at that one number, because it's just like a summary of this full simulator and all of these different data points.
Gotcha. Cool. Yeah. So, I mean, as we go along here, we'll talk a little bit more about the the amount of work that's kind of going into to produce these and all the factors that you're taking into account. But I mean, what I'm hearing right off the bat is that, you know, we're by essentially trying to capture the entire range of outcomes for a particular player or for a particular game. Would you say that's like a more challenging way to go about doing this? I mean, it seems to me that it feels like there's risk at least present there, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think anybody, you can take an intro to statistics course, mm-hmm. an intro to R course, and you can probably create some average MLB projections by you input everyone's season statistics, and maybe you input like the park, and you do a linear regression, and you can come up with something that sort of maybe looks reasonable mm-hmm. For an average projection for each player. Doing a simulation is very difficult.
Yeah.
Because you have all of these factors that all have these different rates. So not just eat the batter and the pitcher, but you have the park, you have the weather is kind of a tough one to account for. You have the umpire, you have all these factors. And then throughout the game, you know, you're simulating and you have to adjust the rates based on the state of the game as well. So someone gets a double. If someone's on second, that actually kind of affects the rates for the probabilities of these different events, because it's going to be a higher probability of an intentional walk, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to account for, you know, pitching changes and stolen bases and yeah. all of these different things that go into the actual way that a game plays out. You're right, there is risk there, because if you mm-hmm. don't do it well, then you can end up with some pretty biased projections where, you know, say you're like not accounting for like pitching changes or you're not doing that well, so you don't have the closer coming in the ninth inning, you're going to end up having this weird kind of skewed projection where it's going to be biased, you know, against teams that have really good closers or whatever. So you really have to account for all this stuff in order for a simulation to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, I think that we've done that. You know, we've been doing this for 6-7 years with this MLB simulator, so I think we're doing a good job with that. But it's a tough task for sure.
So then I guess that kind of almost leads to the question here: why simulate baseball? Why not just project the game on the averages, try to get as accurate of average projections as possible? Why take the extra step and say that you want to take this method where there is additional risk, where a wrong assumption could potentially compound and totally mess up your entire range of outcomes? Why go about it this way?
Can I take this one?
Yes, please do.
So, I mean, for one, it's fun. It's like a really fun challenge to do. I may be crazy for saying that, but I like thoroughly enjoy it. Another reason is just that baseball lends itself really well to a simulation approach.
Mm-hmm.
So each at bat is essentially like an independent event. Like you can simulate the outcome of one at bat, update the game state, and then do the next at bat. And it's a bit easier than football in that manner, because like with football, there's sort of, you know, running clocks and etc. Whereas baseball is very like individual, like event after event after event.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of lends itself to it in that manner, where you can do it with a high degree of accuracy if you're getting those, like if you're accurately updating the game states and everything like that, you can do it really well. And then I think like the third reason, at least for me, is like the DFS performance, where you can, you know, get like an average projection just doesn't really do much for you in baseball. You mm-hmm. want to know how those runs are scored, how a team's going to perform, how a chalkier team's going to perform. Like, you know, there's a lot of like extra nuance that is really valuable in DFS that you can't get from an average projection.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. So I one more question I have here, and I guess this gets a little bit into, you know, some specifics of how SaberSim works, but obviously, so we're simulating the game of baseball to generate the full range of outcomes. But along with that, we have the average projections. Would it be enough to use a simulation-based approach to try to generate average projections alone? And basically, you know, is it enough to say we're using simulations, we're generating average projections, and because we simmed these games, these average projections are better than the rest of the industry?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think that you're exposing yourself to more risks, like Matt covered, and mm-hmm. you're not getting some of the upside value of it. Whereas like you're essentially running the risk of misprojecting any of those like numerous factors that you have to tweak in to get right, and then you're only getting the summary number out of it,
Right.
as opposed to sort of like really a lot of the useful data points and statistics that we're able to capture from that.
What are some of those data points and statistics that come out of the sims we have?
Yeah, I'd say correlations on like higher end performance. So obviously like everyone knows stacking, correlate your batters and everything's like that, but like it's significantly different if you say hold a constant of like this team scores a lot of runs and you look at like their upside correlation that Matt talked about yesterday, where it's like the how correlated those players are in high upside scenarios, which is like what you're looking for in DFS. And you're by capturing that, by getting the percentiles, by being able to see like this is a higher upside pitcher because they're, a low contact pitcher and maybe more likely to have like a complete game shutout or something like that. There's a lot of sort of like those nuanced things that I think we do a really good job of capturing.
Yeah, definitely. I want to add on that Will's absolutely right that by just if we only provided the mean projection from the sim, I think if you do the sim well, which we do, then there is value in having just the mean projection from a sim versus having a mean projection from another way of generating them. Obviously, there's the higher risk, but I think you do get value because being able to combine all like these dozens of factors that go into a game into a simulator, you are going to get more accurate projections that way than if you just do it with like a kind of a normal like linear regression or something like that. Because of just the way that all these variables interact, it's such a complicated relationship between all the variables that you can only really do that the most accurate way with the sim. But if you're going to be simulating the game, right, and you have like all of these possible outcomes, why would you just then publish a single number that summarizes them? And so yeah, it's like if we're doing this, why wouldn't we have provide all this other data and all these other, especially for DFS and for GPP tournament play, where what everybody cares about is getting those top 1%, 0.1% outcomes. Like that's what matters for playing DFS. The average projection isn't really going to help you that much in getting those top 1% outcomes. It's having true simulations with these ranges of outcomes where we can actually look at how often players are hitting top 1%, how often combinations of players are kind of hitting those ceiling outcomes and building lineups using that data. And so that's really like where that simulation approach has way, way more value than in just providing mean projections.
Gotcha. Cool. So you kind of hinted at it, I guess, or I mean, with the idea of it's kind of like a video game where we're looking at an at bat. Can you briefly kind of just walk me through a sim, basically from start to finish? So it's the start of the game, the leadoff hitter, I guess, comes up to bat. What happens next?
Yeah, so I'll start. Will, feel free to chime in after, because I know you've been really deep into this lately. But basically, what happens is, so yeah, the leadoff batter comes to bat, and so we have a bunch of different factors that each are sort of treated similarly in that we have basically like these context-neutral projections for all these different factors, and so that's sort of like we take years and years, like tens or hundreds of thousands of individual plays. And we generate these context neutral projections for all these factors. So that's the factors are obviously players, batters, and pitchers. But like I mentioned before, there's weather and umpire and the sort of like the base out state, like who's on the bases and how many outs there are, all these different factors. And we use these formulas essentially to combine them into these rates of all the different events. So we'll take these dozens of factors, we'll combine them in to create like the probability of the player hitting a home run. Okay, if they don't hit a home run, what's the probability that they're going to hit a ball that gets caught, or that they're going to get a strikeout or a single, double, triple? So there's all these different events that can happen, and we basically just stick those probabilities into a essentially a random number generator, like it's a weighted run, number generator that it's as if you put a, 100 different like colored balls in a bucket, and then you pick one out and you say, okay, well, it's a home run. And so then we add a run to the away team's total, and we get to the next batter, and maybe they get a walk. And so then now there's a runner on first, and it's the third batter. And so we just repeat that over and over. But every time the rates are changing a bit because the state of the game is different, the players that are involved in the play are different. And so it's this really complex, like every play is almost like it's this unique formula that's combining all these different probabilities into kind of the final probability of the events that can happen in a play.
Gotcha. That's really interesting. So yeah, I mean, I think especially because of the way that baseball just kind of looks as you're watching the game, it has a very one-on-one feeling to it, pitcher versus batter, at least in that particular instance. But what I'm hearing you say here is that, there's actually a lot of context involved in terms of actually calculating a probability, and that there's a material difference in the probabilities of a batter having different outcomes at the plate based on what has happened in the game up to that point. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. I mean, I would say that the context in that sense of like what has happened so far is generally going to be for baseball, it's generally less important than, for example, for NBA or NFL, like the score matters a lot more. NFL in particular, like the team that's losing will be have a vastly different strategy than the team that's winning in the fourth quarter. Whereas for MLB, it's not quite as stark of a difference. You're not going to see major differences in home run rates between a team that's losing by a lot and winning by a lot. But who's on base matters. Obviously, and then I think who ends up, doing those pitching changes makes a big difference. So if a team is up by one run going into the seventh, eighth inning, they're going to pitch their better pitchers, and that is something that we're accounting for in the bullpen management of, the state of the game kind of depends who impacts who's pitching, which is a big factor. So that's probably the most significant way that the state of the game affects the those probabilities is like who is pitching and who, and even like subbing batters in and out. We do a bit of that as well. So yeah.
So what does that look like? How do we model bullpen usage and the chance of a different starter getting pulled versus staying in the game, or what does that look like?
Yeah, so I'll take this one.
Yeah, go for it.
That's what I've been working on lately is basically obviously we're tracking, their expected pitches. Like, we're, expecting them to throw 90 pitches on average in this game. And then in the game, the pitches they've thrown so far, the runs they've given up, as well as like a separate factor from that is the run differential in the game. So, if they've given up 7 runs, but they've scored 15, it's less important than if they've given up 7 runs and it's tied 7-7. So like run differential, runs, their pitches that they've thrown, and then their expected pitches. And we essentially come up with a probability that they're going to get pulled or not. And we try to figure out who like they would most likely be replaced with. And we just slot them in there and mark them in as the new pitcher if they've been pulled, or let them run a little bit if it rolls and it's not that probability. So.
Gotcha. Cool. And Matt, you had mentioned pinch hitting as well, I think. Do we do any modeling of that likelihood to get pinch hit for? And who's
Yeah, we do have the likelihood of batters getting pinch hit in the sim, and so that's right now we're not doing too much with like differentiating that based on the state of the game. We do I believe we do look at the handedness of the opposing pitcher. Actually, not positive about that, but I think we definitely have the likelihood of each batter just based on like his recent historical data of them getting pinch hit or not. So often teams will have platoon batters where they'll only start against lefties or righties, and then once the pitcher changes, they'll get swapped out for the other one. So those are batters where they're going to have a more limited upside because they might, or maybe a more limited floor. Either way, they're going to have a lower projection, right? Because they're going to have just fewer plate appearances per game. So that's an area where we are incorporating it, but there's I think more even that we could do that we're planning on kind of improving on as the season progresses of like being smarter about those substitutions. But yeah, we are doing that, and then we're doing that with pitchers as well. So because we have a simulation-based approach, you know, if a pitcher come an NL, well, I guess it's universal DH now, so this becomes less relevant. So it used to be when there were pitchers that batted, we would sub them out when they got up in a certain situation. Now it's universal DH, so not quite. We don't have that impact anymore, but yeah.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the DH and some of the other changes this year as we move along. A couple other, I guess, kind of just quick questions on the Sims themselves. Are there any other, you know, factors that you would kind of describe as uniquely baseball? Anything that particularly shows up when you're simulating baseball that you have to think about for this sport that maybe doesn't come up as a big factor for other sports?
I think umpire. That would be my vote for that factor. That is when I first started working on it, like a little over a year ago. It's like, wow, we're really accounting for that. But yeah, it's like it has a meaningful impact on the strikeout rate. Mm-hmm. You know, if some, you know, umps have a wider zone or a larger zone, like that is something that seems kind of small and ridiculous, but has a significant impact on the game. I know. Absolutely. I've seen like some Twitter accounts that have published like the runs that, you know, an ump has cost a team over the course of a game. Mm-hmm. So that's my vote for, you know, a small factor that is meaningfully, you know, impactful and uniquely baseball.
What's important to look at when you're thinking about umpires in terms of the way that it affects the outcomes of a game?
So I think, I mean, for me, what I would say is the most important thing to look at for umpires is to not overreact to like small sample sizes. And so I think because we're accounting for umps in a smart way, where we're including them in this like very advanced like model where we do proper like regression towards the mean and account for these sample sizes, we're accounting, you know, if an ump has five games where pitchers are getting 50% more strikeouts, that's like probably a small impact on their like true rate. And so I agree with Will that you see a lot of Twitter accounts that are like, oh, this is the impact of these umps on run scoring.
Yeah.
But there's so much noise in that data that you do have to be really careful about how you're looking at that. That said, with umps that have a really large sample of data, you can see, even if they have, you know, say that this some umpire, because they have like an inch wider strike zone, pitchers are getting 5% more strikeouts. That sounds small, but over the course, I mean, that's a pretty decent impact.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't just impact, yeah, pitchers get more strikeouts, but batters obviously get fewer hits. And it like really just has a cascading effect on the whole game. And so that's something where I would never try to like incorporate that into my own process, like outside of, rather than just sort of trusting like that a smarter model is going to be able to do that, because it's very difficult to just look at the umpire stats and be like, okay, I guess I'll bump this pitcher up maybe, you know. So that's the kind of thing that you really want to have like a more statistically valid model or sim to account for that kind of thing.
Gotcha. And I mean, so I know I have a sense of like, there's some umpires that maybe are a little more generally favorable to pitching, some that maybe are a little more generally favorable to hitters. There's also a spectrum of just good umpires, consistent umpires, and probably bad umpires. Is that something that we take into account, like the variance of an individual ump, of how accurate their calls will be throughout the game, beyond whether they're like on average beneficial more to pitchers or hitters?
So not the variance for that isn't umpire specific. We do account for, it's called binomial variance, which is essentially like, if this rate is a 70% probability and we have this sample size, what we think it's 70%, but it can likely fall between say 68 and 72%. So we are incorporating sort of variance in our assumptions.
Yeah.
But it is not, we're not attempting to sort of apply that variance directly to a specific umpire or player. I think oftentimes that can be, it's more a result of a small sample size than it is like, it's not necessarily that umpire is crazy. It's that, you know, that umpire is, we're only looking at 20 games and he's had 10 left side and 10 right side. So I think we do a pretty good job of accounting for that variance, but it's at a more general level.
And the other thing with umps is they obviously have a huge sample size of individual pitches. And so if an ump is just bad and they're like calling the exact same pitch, a ball and a strike from one pitch to the next, that's actually going to like smooth out a probably like pretty well, even just over the course of a game. So you're not going to have too much variance like on a game level for an inconsistent up, because like just in the course of a game, they'll probably like go mostly like one side or the other will sort of like even out.
Yeah.
So it's like frustrating to watch as a fan, and I'm sure as a player it's frustrating, but probably from a DFS impact, it's not going to have a huge effect outside of just, you know, the small sample size noise that Will mentioned.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, before I bury us in an hour-long stream about how we handle umpires, one of the other questions that I wanted to ask, whether we talked about yesterday is an important factor here in baseball DFS. I think, I mean, it's important in some ways to all sports played outside, but feels like a very uniquely baseball thing, at least to me, in terms of the way that it can affect projections. A win game at Wrigley Field, for example, is always the classic example. How do we incorporate weather into our model?
I'll start with that. So the main factors are temperature and wind, and then obviously whether the park is being played in a dome impacts whether, you know, weather even matters. But that is a thing, you know, there are a number of parks that have retractable roofs. And so knowing whether the roof is open or closed matters. But really the main things, we've looked at other types of, like the effect of humidity and some other weather factors. And generally it's like temperature is by far the most important. And then wind is second, but even wind has a much different impact based on different parks. So the biggest example of that is Wrigley Field. That's where the wind has like by far the biggest effect. And you see that in Vegas lines too. If the wind is blowing like out towards the outfield at like 10 to 15 degrees, that's probably going to increase like the game total by like two full runs, right, or maybe more over the average, which is just absurd. And then it's vice versa. If it's blowing in, it's going to vastly decrease the scoring. So that is incorporated into the sim. For most parks, the temperature is the biggest thing. And I think it is important, when you're thinking about the temperature, that it is more than just home runs. So the biggest impact is kind of how far the ball flies. So when it's hotter, basically the ball flies further because of physics. And so there's more home runs in hotter weather. But when you get to the extremes, it actually has some effects on other stats as well, like strikeouts and walks, where if it's super cold, I think pitchers have a harder time gripping the ball. And then on the other side, I think if it's like so hot that like pitchers are super sweaty, like it has impacts there. And I don't want to like apply all this like guesswork into why things are this way, but when you look at the statistics and the probabilities, you know, the temperature actually does have these interesting effects on not just home run rates, especially at the extremes. But yeah, it's definitely something that's important to factor in. I think, again, similar to umpire, it's important not to overreact to small sample sizes, where you'll see some like tools out there that'll be like, oh, like the weather impact for this game is plus 30% to home runs because there's been like three games in the past with these conditions where they were high scoring. And you want to be really careful about not overreacting to small sample sizes there. And you also want to be careful not to conflate the temperature and the park, where, you know, games that are in hot environments on average, the park and the temperature are obviously correlated, and so you don't want to double count that effect. So that's something that, you know, our the Saberson model does well, and that's kind of just built into how we create projections, is that we account for that like correlation between the variables. But if you're looking at it yourself, you want to be careful about not double counting and not overreacting to small sample sizes, just in terms of kind of doing that personal research and whatnot.
And I will say, on the sample side, that's like, I'd say probably the biggest thing that I've done here working at SaberSim. It's like my favorite subject. Every time we start a new sport, I get to yell at Matt about our initial regression values and all of like the, you know, decay rate. That stuff's just fascinating to me. And I think that's something that we do really well as far as determining not just like, let's not over regress this or let's not under regress it, but like we can sort of solve for the optimal amount of how much to, you know, weigh a certain sample size. So that's something that I think that our model is really, really strong at.
Gotcha. And just to expand on that, if you don't know what like regression is or regressing is, basically it's just like how much like a sample of data matters in terms of like, in terms of predicting the future. So it's basically saying, if we say we have 5 games of data, that's going to have a different impact on different statistics. So like a strikeout rate is one of the most stable statistics. So if you have 5 games of data on a pitcher's strikeout rate, that's going to tell you a lot more than if you have 5 games of a pitcher's home run rate. And so similar, so basically what Will's talking about with that regression is saying, how are we, when we take, you know, some number of plate appearances or games mm-hmm. for some factor like weather or like umpire, it's how are we taking those numbers and then getting an accurate prediction out of them that's accounting for sort of the innate randomness that goes into the numbers. And so, yeah, like Will said, that he's worked a lot on that, and we feel really good about like how we're really strong at doing that in a statistically valid way, that's and mathematically valid. Like we've really like dug into like the math of this, yeah. And like we're literally, Will and I have like done these like math equations of like figuring out how the variance works and how to like do these regression values. And so it's that, and then it's like, how much does a game a day ago impact the projection compared to a game a year ago? And that's the other factor there, is like how quickly do we react to recent data? And that's kind of the other thing. So it's the regression, and then it's like this decay rate that we call it, which is how quickly we're reacting to recency.
Gotcha. And if I'm understanding correctly, I mean, this would apply to pretty much everything that you were treating as a valuable factor in terms of projecting performance. This isn't just weather. This isn't just umpires. This would be like virtually every single factor you have to come up with. How important is this thing? But also, in a world where we don't have perfect information, perfect sample sizes, how much can we weight the thing in this situation?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. So everything, batters, pitchers, parks, weather, temperature, like it all has its own special values.
Gotcha. Yeah,
for each stat. So it ends up being like hundreds of different values, because it's like batter single rate, batter home run rate, pitcher home run, like it's all of these, it combines. And so we literally have just like these hundreds of like values that we're using to kind of regress and regress these rates. So yeah.
Gotcha. Well, maybe I'll pick out one of maybe one of those hundreds here, because Matt, you had mentioned it a second ago. And I wanted to talk about the how ballparks affect the game. You had mentioned that we have weather and that it's correlated to park factors, but that's not a perfect correlation, that there's some independent factor that a ballpark the game's being played in affects the game anyway. What can you talk a little bit about how that comes into play?
Yeah, I mean, one of the cool things about baseball is that every park is different. So it's not, you know, it's not like other sports where there's these specified dimensions of the field. It's pretty unique in that way, and that like every park literally has a different distance to the outfield wall. You need to hit the ball a different distance depending on where you are in order to get a home run, which is actually kind of like, when you step back and think about it, it's kind of wild that there's like not the standardized park dimension like there is for literally like every other sport. But it's really cool because it means that there's just like these differences in all of these different rates based on the park. And it's not just the like outfield distance, but it's how much foul ball territory, foul territory is there. So like in the Oakland A's park, there's like a ton of foul territory. And so it's a lot more likely that if a player hits a foul ball, it's going to get caught rather than just be a strike.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so every park has just different projected rates for all the different events. You know, so Coors Field is the famous one for being a very hitter friendly park. That's actually not related to the dimensions of the park at all, but more the elevation. So higher elevation means thinner air, which means the ball goes farther.
Mm-hmm.
So in Coors, there's just higher scoring in general. Basically all of the offensive statistics are inflated in Coors because of the elevation. And you'll see that in Vegas totals. You'll see that in our simulated totals. But then, you know, there's just every park is unique in that way. And so some, like the Giants park, is very pitcher friendly. You know, like I said, Coors, and like an interesting one that we've actually spent some time accounting for is Baltimore, which used to be very hitter friendly. They mm-hmm. just moved the walls and changed the height of them as well, I believe. And so it's actually a quite different park that's much, much more pitcher friendly now. So we've done some digging into the stats around that and making some adjustments that we'll kind of see how the park plays out in the first few weeks, and probably continue to tinker with that a little bit, because no one really knows how that's going to play out, but we've accounted for that kind of thing. So yeah, it's interesting to see how that park impacts the scoring, but you'll definitely see it when there's Coors, you know, the Rockies park on the slate, yeah. But even other ones, you know, just the projections are going to be different based on where they're playing.
Great American small park, as they say.
Yeah.
It's another one. I feel like when the Reds are at home, it's always a pretty high total game. You mentioned Vegas just a second ago when talking about, you know, playing a game in Coors, our projections are going to increase. Also, Vegas's run totals are going to be increased. To what extent is Vegas involved in our model for baseball?
So it is a factor, and that's something that we've gone back and forth on that over the years. Mm-hmm. We want to be independent of Vegas because we want to have kind of projections that are our own. And we've always felt very confident about the Saberson model, and we've always performed really well compared to Vegas. So like over the past many years, like our game projections are on par with the Vegas, you know, money lines and totals in terms of accuracy. That said, we are implementing more of kind of these adjustments to not stray too far from Vegas. And that's not just, you know, it's partly because we want to get more accurate. There are biases in our model, like there are in any model, especially like we said, simulations have a higher risk of just one flawed assumption making a big impact on the final score. And so we want to make sure that if there's something that the model's missing, which we will miss things because it's a complicated model, that we're going to be kind of, we have these guide rails in place to adjust towards Vegas, which is a very safe, sophisticated, like that is based on real money that professional gamblers that know what they're doing are, they're kind of making those lines. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to be pretty safe. And even if it's not a bias and we just kind of feel like we disagree with Vegas, we still want to be careful about straying too far, just because, like I said, the value of the simulation based approach isn't necessarily like the mean projection. It's like the value that you get from these ranges of outcomes, from the correlations, the upside correlations. And so even if we exactly matched Vegas in terms of like all of the run totals, in terms of all the player props, everything, which we're not going to do, but even if we did, you'd have a huge amount of value over the field because of the way that we're creating these ranges of outcomes. And so we want to make sure that users, you know, have projections that are like safe, that you're not going to be exposed to these either biases or risks from straying too far from the field while still getting the value that comes from the simulation-based approach. So, yeah, I know it's kind of like a long answer, but I think it is important to talk about that. And it is something that we're discussing a lot internally of like, for all sports, is how do we want to incorporate Vegas? But the main goal is like, we want to make sure that we have these guide rails in place so that any sort of bias or false assumption is not going to stray too far from reality.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, I mean, we've been talking about a couple other sports where Vegas is more of a primary factor, maybe in some of these sports, the primary factor. That's not the case here. More of something that we're kind of using to check ourselves as we move along. Gotcha. And I think that was a really interesting point that you made too, of that essentially, if you have an implied total for a team on a slate, that number is actually essentially a mean projection. That's Vegas's mean projection for the team total of the game. And that comes with the same issues that mean projections have for individual players in baseball just as easily. That, I mean, there's that, the irony is that, you know, the mean projection for the Dodgers at Coors is 6.2 runs, that they can't even score 6.2 runs. That's actually not a possible outcome. It's just descriptive of the entire sample and has the same issues there.
Yep, absolutely.
Cool. One of the other questions I had wanted to ask, especially thinking about sample sizes, is how we think about dealing with minor league players. I know that's kind of an issue for all sports. You've got a set of rookies entering the sport every year, but for baseball in particular, you've got a much bigger pool of minor league players that have the availability to be called up. How do we deal with that? If, you know, somebody's starting their first game in the majors, whether they've got a rich history of minor league data or not.
Yeah, so that's my other really big project of okay. this offseason is we call it minor league equivalency. Essentially, it's we have all of their stats from, you know, AA, AAA. And so we can, you know, measure, like, we have the park factor the same way as we do, like, a Camden Yards park. We mm-hmm. have, you know, whatever park they're playing at in AA. And so we're able to generate the rates in the same way. And then my sort of, like, the work that I've been doing is how do we adjust that? So, you know, a player who is, you know, very good in AA might just be good in AAA. And he's going to get called up because he's at the top of AA, but then you should obviously expect a decrease in his performance because he's facing better players. So that's something that I've, like, worked really hard on, is getting sort of like the optimal adjustments to each of, like, the individual stats that we're looking at. Like, you know, are they going to, if they're hitting less home runs, where is that sort of shifting to? Is it because they're striking out more, or is it because the walls are further back and they're flying out more? So sort of looking at all of that and adjusting them, as well as sort of combining, I'll try not to get too, like, bogged down in it, but the adjusting the regression value. So we do independent regression values for a AA player. Like, their rates are sort of, like, more variant than a AAA player or a major league player. So adjusting those regression values to sort of get them in the correct context when they're called up to the major leagues.
Gotcha. And is it true, or that, like, so a AAA player gets called up into the majors, is the just general expectation that they just get worse at everything? Or is it a little more complicated than that? Like, somebody, you know, does their theoretical batting average come down and their home run rate come down and their ability to get down on base all comes down as they get into a harder league? Or
yeah, so it's a bit twofolded. So one, they're just facing better pitchers. So the way we look at it is we sort of have context neutral for everybody. So we have, like, this batter against any pitcher, like, just if you took a random pitch, like, his average mm-hmm. context neutral. And so it's a mix of that and also just facing a pitcher who's going to throw less. But yeah, we see their contact rates decline. But, you know, one thing that we see increase is their home run per contact rate. And part of that is, you know, like, obviously pitchers are throwing 100 mile an hour fastballs, which you can take it further than if you were hitting, like, an 85 mile an hour fastball. So it's a bit more nuanced than just, like, bring everything down. And obviously some stats are more effective. It's like strikeout is going to go up because they're facing better pitchers and they're just not as good relative to the rest of the, you know, majors as they were in, you know, AAA.
Gotcha. Cool. I have a couple kind of, I guess I would say, almost summary questions about the Sims themselves here before we jump into a few of the things that we've done for this season in particular. The first, I mean, thinking about all the factors we've talked about here, and Matt, you mentioned the hundreds of different factors that are kind of coming into play here. Is there something that you guys commonly hear talked about when discussing projecting or predicting or even simulating baseball, or even just in DFS strategy broadly, that gets talked about as a factor that's important that you guys have found maybe isn't really predictive or is too noisy or just isn't very useful information?
Yeah. So, I mean, the famous one is batter versus pitcher, BVP, as people like to call it. So yeah, a lot of people will look at, you know, the specific matchup between an individual batter and an individual pitcher and say, okay, they've got, you know, 30 plate appearances where this batter faced this pitcher. and he's batting 400 with 5 home runs, and so, you know, he's going to be a good play for tonight. You know, this is one that's been analyzed very extensively, and I don't know that anybody has really found statistically significant results there. Yeah. I think the main, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons for that. Like, the main one is sample size. It's very, very difficult to get a big enough sample size between a batter and a pitcher where there's just statistically relevant. Like, even if there's a true performance increase when a certain batter faces a certain pitcher, in order to, like, just get results that that have enough data to be true, you have to get, like, hundreds probably of plate appearances, and that's hard to get. And if you do get them, then it's going to be over, like, many years where the pitcher has changed, the batter has changed. And so it's like, yeah, maybe, like, John Lester against, like, who's an old MLB bat, like, I don't know, Pujols. Ryan Braun or Pujols or whatever. Yeah, it's like, yeah, maybe they have, like, a few hundred, you know, plate appearances, but, like, it's, you know, John Lester in 2008 is a lot different than John Lester now. I mean, those two probably don't actually have that much together, but you know what I'm saying? It's like, pitchers and batters has changed too much for the first part of that that matchup to be relevant. So that's something where, you know, you might get lucky and see this matchup where they have really good numbers and you're like, all right, I'm going to boost this guy. And maybe they actually are good. I'm not saying that it doesn't exist, because anybody that's, like, played baseball is like, oh, well, clearly, like, you see some pitchers better. And I don't want to deny that's true, but it's really hard to get anything relevant from the actual data there. So that's one thing. I think the other thing that comes to mind is, like, hot streaks. You know, the hot hand, that's another thing that's been analyzed a lot. I highly recommend the book by Tom Tango, which is, like, a very old kind of sabermetrics book, but it's, like, one of the, like, it's like the Bible of sabermetrics. It has a lot of different analyses of this kind of thing, and they look at the hot hand, and there's, again, very little statistical evidence for hot streaks being real. Again, that is something where there probably is real if you look at, you know, in reality, but, like, the stats are just really hard to tell the difference between a hot streak and noise. And so if you're trying to actually incorporate that into your process, you're probably more likely to just be, like, making random changes that are minus EV than actually getting a real, you know, statistically significant you know, value from that.
And probably making an adjustment that's getting you a little chalkier too, if a lot of other people are following, like, recent form of what players have done.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. What would you say is overall the biggest and maybe the most unique challenge to simulating baseball in particular? Something that stands out compared to other sports is this is kind of what makes doing this for baseball uniquely a little more challenging.
Good, I know, question.
I'm putting you on the spot a little.
Yeah, this is a really good question.
I mean, I do think... Oh, sorry, go ahead, Will, if you have something
you
in mind.
Go for it. I'm thinking on more.
Yeah, I mean, I think the pitcher management, it, like we talked about before, is one of the most challenging parts of it, because it's sort of similar to some parts of, like, NFL, where you're trying to simulate human decisions. Simulating pitcher management is you're simulating manager decisions, which is hard to do to, like, be able to successfully, like, project what a human is going to decide, that a very illogical, imperfect human at that.
Right.
So I would say that that's one of the most challenging things is, like, yeah, when is a starting pitcher going to get pulled? Who's going to come in from the bullpen? It's very complicated logic that I think we do a good job with it now. I think we can do a better job of it, and we are, like, actively working on improving that aspect of it, because I think it's one of those things there's more that we can do there. But that's probably what I would say is, like, the most challenging, one of the most challenging parts of simulating baseball in particular.
Yeah, I think on my end, like more of the data side is really the minor league adjustments. I think that's it's a really tricky one because obviously like players are getting called up from AA, AAA, you know, majors, but it's just they're very different. Like the leagues play meaningfully different, and so adjusting those stats it takes a lot of care to do it properly. Like you can a small tweak really can multiply very quickly from that, and you can get like, you know, a rookie projected for 15 points on DraftKings, which is like not gonna happen if it's I feel like that was a really tricky like one that I guess I'm really proud of, I think, where we're at with it. But yeah, I think that's probably like one of the trickiest things is there's so much data there that you want to use. Like you don't want to just like assume this rookie is, you know, like a comparison. But yeah, it is very tricky to sort of accurately incorporate all of it.
Gotcha. And it seems like on both fronts, with both like kind of the bullpen and the leash of starting pitchers and with minor leagues, that we're modeling it in some capacity. It's something that's captured in the model. Do you think for either of those, I guess I'll ask you each in turn, that there is an opportunity for a user to add value to what we're trying to do with these things? And how would you recommend somebody go about knowing intimately how the actual models for these things are built?
Yeah, so there's definitely value to be added. So, I mean, I will tell you, in terms of the minor league one first, we aren't accounting for their prospect status. So I'll just be upfront with that. So we look at all of the minor league statistics and we base our stuff off of that. But currently, we might add this in the future, but currently we aren't looking at, like, are they a top 10 prospect? And so, like, you can probably add value by, like, bumping up a highly rated prospect that has bad minor league numbers, or vice versa, a prospect that's not in the top 100, but has really good minor league numbers, we might be slightly overprojecting, because if they're not highly rated, then that probably means there's something in like the scouting report that indicates that they're not going to translate to the major leagues as well as their numbers might suggest. So I think that is an opportunity to add value. On like the pitching rotation front, you know, if you know that a manager is like more likely to pull a pitcher quickly, just based on their tendencies, that can be something to add. You know, we're not differentiating between different managers in that regard. It does kind of bake into like the pitcher's average pitch count projection, where someone has this manager that's very conservative with like the pitcher leash, that's going to be baked into their pitch count. But
yeah,
it's still like you might have some limited upside for a pitcher that, like, you know, this manager is never going to let this pitcher go over 90 pitches, no matter how well he's doing. That's going to like really cap their ceiling. And that's something that is maybe baked into the mean pitch count projection, but isn't necessarily like in the sim that we always remove them at 90 pitches. So that's what comes to mind. I don't know if Will has anything else there, but.
Yeah, nothing for you. I think minor leagues are going to be the easiest quick thing on it is I know like we saw Wander Franco come up last year. That comes to mind, where it's like what we know are his minor league stats, and I think that we do a really good job of translating those into what sort of the major league rates would be. But like Wander Franco is he like the number 3 prospect or something, like on
I think he was number 1 maybe.
Oh yeah. So yeah. There is definitely something where like we probably were under on him. I'm not sure, but like those, yeah, I think those are specifically like the best places to add value on it.
Yeah. I do want to point out that we do, it's not just the statistics with the minor leaguers, because we do have the age matters, they're like position, but I think the age is a pretty big factor. If a 19-year-old comes up to the majors, there's obviously not a huge sample of those, but we do account for those players are generally much better, because you don't get to the majors at 19 unless you're like a top, unless you're like Bryce Harper or wonderful. I think he was either 19 or 20. So that does matter. If you're 27 and you're making your debut, you're going to be worse. So just want to point that out, that like the age is a factor there, but still, I think there's some added value, like Will said, in the, like the prospect status.
Gotcha. Cool. And one quick note, just something you mentioned, Matt, in a situation where there is an explicit pitch count that we're aware of, that is something that we capture in the way we simulate the game, right? If the manager actually just straight up comes and says he's not pitching more than 90, that's something that we reflect in the way that we simulate the game.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's obviously it's not. We don't force them to throw 90 because, like, if they go out there and get shell shocked in the first inning,
right,
they're gonna get pulled.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, we are incorporating, like, if a manager says, like, this is his stop.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's jump here and talk a little bit about this season in particular. We'll start from the standpoint of the model or the Sims themselves. I know we've kind of hinted at this, talked about this a little bit throughout the stream, but can both of you really kind of summarize, I guess, what's new this season in particular? We mentioned bullpen. We mentioned some of the minor league work, but what if someone were to open up the hood and take a look, what would stand out as being new for this year?
Go ahead, Will. You're the one that's been working on this stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, that the bulk of my stuff so far really has been in those two areas. It's okay. Been, you know, obviously MLB was the first model that I worked on when I joined SaberSim. Mm-hmm. And then since then, you know, worked on like seven. Where it worked on like a bunch more models. So I sort of got a lot of insights specifically on like sort of regression and decay stuff. So that was the first thing that I went in and improved. So I think that in general, we've just seen an accuracy increase on mm-hmm. a lot of our stats because of that. It's obviously like they're relatively minor things. Like it's not like we were way off, but they're like those small improvements there. And then minor leaguers, I think that you'll see us modeling them more accurately. So I think in some cases, there was definitely a dichotomy. There were some minor leaguers that we were consistently over on and some minor leaguers consistently under on. And I think we've sort of found the right balance for them. And then I think that the other thing is just going to be in sort of like the bullpen and the pitcher leash. And so sort of like I would say the distributions of pitchers would probably be the third spot.
I think to add to that, the other major thing that we're looking at is stolen bases. So yeah, that's like,
that's what I'm working
I think
on today.
One, that's what Will's working on today and he somehow forgot. No, just, but yeah, improving how we're modeling stolen bases is a big thing. So I think just the way that we've done it in the past has been okay. But I think that is one of the weaker points, I would say, in the model. So we're getting better at just being more accurate at predicting stolen bases based on, you know, the player tendencies and recent data and stuff. We're also adding like catcher as a factor there. So we previously didn't account for like the strength of a catcher in stolen base rates. We will be doing that this season. So obviously a catcher with a cannon arm is going to not just throw out more batters, but batters are not going to be running on catchers like that as often. Mm-hmm. And even the pitcher as well is going to impact things. You know, there's the obvious like a lefty pitcher generally is better at holding runners on, but then certain pitchers like John Lester is a famous example is just very, very bad at that. There's obviously a lot of noise out there. And so we're looking at making sure that we're doing that in a way that's not just like pulling in kind of random noise. But yeah, I would say stolen bases are like the other factor that we're really, we've gotten a lot more data. So like we, just like pulled in better data from like our play-by-play in terms of stolen bases and that we're incorporating that more strongly into the model and into the sim.
Gotcha. So what does the process look like for knowing if our improvements are actually making things better, especially in a sport where averages aren't even very common outcomes necessarily for some of these players? How do we know, you know, if we make a change that we've improved, that we've gotten more accurate?
Yeah, so for the bulk of what I'm doing is we sort of separate out the sim work and then the sim inputs. Uh-huh. And so when I'm working on sort of how we create those sim inputs, we have a variety of different like metrics that we use to test an accuracy, and we store the output of each thing. So I can go in and tweak, you know, say like this decay value, and I can see how much did that adjust our, or like how did that change our accuracy of that stat specifically. So we're tracking all of that and then making sure that, you know, one, that the accuracy makes sense. I know like sometimes you can accidentally like introduce like future data or something like that and you have 100% accuracy, which is not possible. Mm-hmm. So we're able to track that, make sure that the accuracy is like realistic, and then also that it's improving so that we're, you know, we're limiting how far we're off. So that's the bulk of my work on the projection side. And then we're also, you know, looking at like actual sim performance against sort of like the actual stats. as well as like Vegas closing lines.
Gotcha. Cool. Yep. So we talked a little bit here about what's changed with the model. There's obviously a few things that have changed with baseball this year. Touched on a couple of them. Matt, you mentioned the universal DH, and we talked about the changes to Camden Yards. I guess I'll leave this kind of as an open question to you guys. First, what are we doing to account for these things in the simulations? But is there any particular change to the game of baseball, professional baseball, I guess specifically here this year, that you think is going to have the biggest impact on our sims, on I guess even optimal DFS strategy?
So yeah, so I guess the first question is, how are we adjusting for those things? So when there's like a factor of like the Camden Yards changing their dimensions, generally that's just something that we kind of override. So we like have our input projections that Will's been talking about, and we essentially just like adjust those before running the sim, because there's nothing really that we can like put into, like it's a factor that's not in the data, and so we have to manually adjust. Sure. So and that's okay, and like that, I think that's the correct way of doing it. So, you know, we're making manual adjustments based on sort of our research, and we try to be as objective as possible there, like looking at the data, looking at experts and how they're talking about the effect of this. So that's how we do like Camden Yards, is we just apply these adjustments to different stats. In terms of like changes, you know, one big thing is that all parks will be using a humidor now. That's a change for the season, that some parks over the past few seasons, they've been slowly adding it. So I think Arizona was one of the most impactful ones, because it's such a dry climate. And so humidors basically it's where you put the ball in a like machine that makes it like stabilizes the humidity, like the moisture of the ball. I don't know. I'm not like a physics person, but basically the temperature and the humidity of it. And so basically it like standardizes that, because dry balls fly further. So there's more home runs in dry climate. So by adding a humidor to Arizona, it decreased scoring and home runs in particular. So that's going to have the biggest impacts on like these dry climates. I honestly don't remember off the top of my, we've talked about this as a team of how this is going to affect different parks. I don't remember off the top of my head exactly what we're doing there, but we are going to be accounting for the humidor in these places. And again, kind of as the season starts, as we see Vegas lines and as we see the data rolling in, we'll make adjustments
right
accordingly, because anybody that's been following baseball for the past few years, there's been a lot of like controversy over changing the ball and whether MLB like actually changed the ball to decrease scoring. And then there's like the whole sticky substance ban. And so there's like a lot of these external factors that's really hard to bake into the model that we've had to kind of adjust for. And it's always sort of like, we're just a lot of times having to react to this different news that isn't in the data that we know is going to be affecting the results. So that's something that we're just always kind of tinkering with.
And you're immediately battling sample size problems there too. Like if, you know, park has a humidor this year and the first three games go way over the total, everybody's going to freak out and assume it's that.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
So
it might be that, or it.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
As you say, like that, the great thing about sample size is it might actually be that, or it might not. And we can't know. So yeah, it's definitely a tricky situation, but I think that we'll do a good job of it.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Cool. I mean, for something like the universal DH, in terms of accounting for that in the sim, is that as simple for us as just saying these are now the lineups? Now there's not a pitcher, it's just another batter in there?
Yes.
Is there an impact? Yeah, I guess. Okay. So is there a DFS impact beyond that? I mean, one of the things that comes to mind, I guess, for me is that you have these National League pitchers that have been more accustomed historically to throwing against one pitcher in the order. And that's reflective in their historical stats. They may appear to be better pitchers, at least slightly, in a way that's maybe DFS relevant than their American League pitchers, just because they've faced an easier batter one out of every nine plate appearances over time. How do we how do we reconcile that? How are we dealing with that in terms of projecting pitchers, I guess, and also like the hitting performance this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big value of the way that we're doing it. This change, bad projection systems, it'll probably be obvious that they are not accounting for this well, because they're not going to be punishing NL pitchers enough. Like, you have to look at who the pitchers are actually facing when to create those stats. And if you're just looking at like season statistics and not accounting for who they're facing, then you're going to be not accounting for, you know, NL pitchers are going to be better than in your model than they actually are. But yeah, I mean, Will, do you have something to add?
No, I was just going to say, like, I think that, yeah, that is a really strong point of our model, and that essentially any time that the historical data that we're looking at, that a pitcher has come up to bat against another pitcher, obviously that pitcher has, or the batter, who is a pitcher, has more stats to begin with. So, you know, striking out the pitcher it is less, you know, meaningful. Like, they get less reward for that than if they were, you know, striking out an elite batter, so.
Yeah, and I do want to add that carries over to, I think that is a really big strength of the way that we create projections, is that carries over to any other factor too. If someone hits a home run in Coors, they get less of a reward for that in terms of their like projection than if they hit a home run in, you know, San Francisco or in Wrigley with the wind blowing in. Like, we have all these factors in the historical data, and the way that we assign like value to the result of the play is is very dependent on those different factors. And so, like, yes, striking out a pitcher, a pitcher that's batting, it's not going to be the same as striking out Mike Trout, you know?
Gotcha. Yeah, that's really cool. So, I mean, the way we kind of do this, I guess, is, you know, not only do we have an understanding of how much these factors account for, or how much of these factors are predictive when trying to project a certain outcome of happening on an at-bat, but also when the actual outcome takes place, we can kind of pull out the context and actually understand what we've truly learned about this.
Exactly.
Interesting. Cool. A couple other things I know that have changed this year. I just interesting to see if there's, I don't know, anything on the simulation side that's interesting about these, but the 7-inning doubleheaders are gone here this year. If I remember correctly, beyond making our life super easy or much easier for the back end team here, is there any kind of impact to, I guess, what we can take? Is there a discrepancy from what we can learn from those 7-inning games from last year, and then also the way that it's going to change this year? I feel like that was a terrible question. Does that make sense what I'm trying to ask?
No, I get what you're saying. Because our projections are like on a play-by-play, like they're created based on each play rather than each game, we're not going to like, it's not going to be anything that we have to like do extra work to account for. So like, if we're not looking at like the average runs scored by each team or whatever.
Got it.
In each game, and so we're only looking at play by play. So it's like, because just because the game ended at 7 innings, it doesn't really impact how the projections work. Obviously, from a DFS standpoint, it impacts how much you want to play those doubleheader games. But yeah, it's not really like we're kind of naturally similar to the DH stuff. Like, we're naturally just accounting for that in the way that our projections and sim work. I do want to point out, for those that don't know, while they did get rid of, I think, the 7-inning doubleheaders, they are keeping the automatic runner starting on second in extra innings.
Gotcha.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, anybody that's listening, but I'm pretty sure they are keeping that. That is already in the sim, and that's just something like, it's a minor thing, but it's in any impact that it has, it's gonna be accounted for in the sim because we are doing that. I think basically it just means like there's fewer like super long games. The extra inning games will end more quickly because someone's more likely to score. And so it leads to like slightly higher scoring because obviously you have an extra runner if it's tied, but I don't think it has a big impact on like DFS.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, overall, the impression I'm kind of getting is that the way we do this makes our model somewhat resilient, just because like what would apparently be a pretty big change to the way a baseball game would look if you were watching it, we actually can just kind of account for it very naturally by just inputting the new rules changes in and letting the sims kind of work.
For
Cool.
sure.
What's next for us here? I know, I imagine there's still work ongoing with some of the things that we've planned on implementing for this season, but especially as we've gone along to get ready for this season, is there anything that we're already kind of maybe looking at for next season, or maybe as the season goes on, something that maybe a future improvement that we want to do?
One thing that we haven't talked about that's not strictly related to the model, but is our ownership projections are going to get a big overhaul for this season. So, just from a DFS perspective, we are putting a lot of work into improving our ownership. So that'll be, I think, it'll be noticeably better. If not from day one, certainly, like I think that's something that we're kind of working on over the next few weeks, and so we'll see a big improvement with that. Outside of that, I would say, and Will can chime in with anything else that he's thinking about, but the main thing that is one of my priorities is just sort of really building out a really strong like backtesting framework. We have a lot of analysis in place right now that we're looking at, but one of my big priorities for our team is making it a lot easier to test changes and to compare our projections to Vegas to other projection sources, and really just like make sure that we're always improving and that we're staying like as high quality this year as we have been in the past. So, it's really like Will and Eric, the other guy on our models team, are like just heads down like improving the model and the ownership and all that. And I'm kind of trying to both like help them in that and create some frameworks for making sure that we're like staying really focused and like the analytics of like how we're improving are obvious and automated, and that'll just make it way easier as we're moving forward to like, hey, if we make this change, we know the impact that it has. As the season's progressing, we know exactly how good we are, and if we have biases or flaws, that we can like fix them right away. So, yeah, that's really the main thing.
Yeah, and I think for me, just as far as like on the model itself, stolen bases are the biggest one that are like, that's what I've been working on sort of the last couple of days. And I think that they'll almost certainly be implemented tonight or tomorrow. So definitely ready for opening day. So, getting those in there, I think will be obviously like relatively minor as far as like the actual like mean projection, but for context in the game, that's can be really important. Is the game, if a runner is, more likely to steal in the ninth inning on first to get a runner into scoring position. Like there is going to be some context benefits to that. And then I also have a couple of ideas that I want to work on this season with regards to like more pitcher rotation stuff. And borrowing sort of a lot of ideas from our NBA rotations in like a very similar manner of looking at sort of context, looking at historical things made by that team. And so I think that there's definitely some more things for me to dig into.
Gotcha. Cool. I'm excited for it. Matt, without I know maybe you haven't I know it's mostly been Eric working on this super hard, but can you talk a little bit about what's going in or what's changing with the ownership model? I know I've talked a bunch on office hours about how the ownership is kind of currently set up, but what's changing for the way that we're projecting ownership going forward?
Yeah, so I mean, to be honest, right now we're kind of deep into the analysis phase. So we've got a ton of like contest data of like real, like mostly DraftKings, like actual contest entries and ownership, where we can kind of compare our projected to the actual, look at some other sources for ownership and compare us against them. I think the first step is like, let's identify our biases, identify where we need to make adjustments. So like maybe we're under projecting ownership for like the stud pitchers, guys like DeGrom and Scherzer and stuff, where maybe we're like too low on those types of players, or maybe like teams with really high Vegas totals were not accounting for that well enough. But honestly, like right now, it's we're really into the analysis phase, which is that's kind of the first step. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of it is improving on the existing process, which you've talked about. It's like, you know, we have kind of industry other industry projections and stuff that we're kind of putting into the builder with these rules that we're basically trying to like mimic contest like field lineups as well as we can and
Yeah.
get ownership from like the exposures of those lineups. And it's sort of just improving on that process and making that as realistic as possible, because really the goal with like you get perfect ownership projections by like building perfect contest like field contest lineups. And so like that's I think what we really want to try to get best at is like
Right.
let's predict what the field is going to do, and ownership will naturally come from that. So
Yeah, that's one of the things I've always liked about the way we kind of do it, and I talk about that on Office Hours too, is that it's because it comes from building lineups, it can already kind of pick up on some of the nuance of where there's certain positional scarcity or things like that. So yeah, I'm excited to see where that goes. I think it's a good opportunity to jump into some questions. So we have a few questions that have been showing up in chat here. The first one was from Brad. We've talked a lot about the bullpen and the reliever model here, but a really good question here. Are we capturing this season an understanding of which relievers have pitched recently and how that impacts their likelihood of being used in a particular game?
yeah, so for each pitcher, we have all of like their recent game logs and everything, and their day's rest as well as how many pitches they threw recently. So we have an idea of the freshness of each arm, for each
Gotcha.
pitcher. So like in some of those marathon games, which are probably less likely now with the runner on second, but like we have an idea of like, yeah, they can put in this pitcher, but he just started yesterday, so he can't really throw more than 20 pitches before his arm's going to give out. Yeah, so we are incorporating sort of their recent appearances and pitches thrown in sort of a freshness sense.
Gotcha. Cool. Yeah, that was, I mean, one of the things that last year when I was playing Showdown that I would do for research is to try to see which relievers had pitched recently. Is that new? Is that something that we've recently added as of this season?
So I know the pitch counts themselves, like as far as like how we're incorporating that, like as for if this pitcher comes in, how much are they throwing on average? That has been around for a while, but I'm not sure on the logic of their replacements.
Yeah, no, that's new.
That feels new.
I do want to just like disclaimer that that's yeah, it is new, and so we haven't fully. If you're playing Showdowns to start the season, I would just, I mean, obviously, like opening day, it's not as much of an issue, but like there is still value in doing your own research as we really like get better at this, because it is a tough thing to know exactly like. Well, if someone throws 15 pitches the day before, how's that going to impact their whether they'll pitch the next day? And teams can like switch around their rosters pretty frequently. And we do try to, we have data sources to get like updated rosters, but you just always want to be careful with playing relief pitchers in showdowns. And like, I think there's always value in just like doing a bit of your own research to confirm that, okay, this pitcher is actually. They haven't been sent to the minors like this morning. They're look at their recent usage. I think there's still value, but like we'll be kind of improving on that as the season gets started.
Gotcha. Cool. We had a question here that this came in Slack. Said, is the MLB sim granularity by the app bat by the at the by batter level or the by pitch level? I think we've kind of established here that we are doing at pitch, or excuse me, by batter. Said the exact opposite thing. It is an at bat. And correct me if I'm wrong there, but is there any value to doing a by pitch sim here? How is that something we've talked about? Any value that would be added there?
I think my personal opinion on it is that by going pitch by pitch, we're introducing a lot more risks to it for not. Like, I don't see the ceiling of accuracy being significantly higher at a by pitch level versus by at bat. And I think you're exposing yourself to a lot of risks of, like, pitch selection and pitch, like, where are they pitching and,
Yep.
how well they're working the zone. And I think it makes more sense to take it at an at bat level, where you get sort of the smoothed data sets of that.
Yeah, if you do it on a pitch by pitch, like one tiny, like flawed assumption, it's gonna just have a huge impact on the end result. And the other thing is, like, points are awarded on an at bat level, not a pitch level, right. And so, like, that's kind of a good rule of thumb is, like, go as granular as, like, the DFS point scoring is. I mean, obviously that's not a perfect rule of thumb, but, like, I don't think there's really a need to go on the pitch-by-pitch level. That said, I think that is something that we want to look at in the future, is to not necessarily do a pitch-by-pitch sim, but look more closely at pitch selection, see how much signal there is in certain pitch types versus certain batter types, stuff like that. I think there's some cool applications of that kind of thing, but you know, right now it's not too much on that level.
Gotcha. Cool. Another question we had here in Slack is StatCast data considered?
Not really. So we do, we look at in our data, we do have like exit velocity and like launch angle kind of stored in the data. We've looked at it a bit, and to be honest, we haven't found too much statistical significance in in looking at that data. I think that there's some opportunity there, but it's one of those things where like you have to be really careful with that, how you're considering StatCast data, because it is this really granular data that's easy to misinterpret. And I think it's very easy for people to look at StatCast data and get kind of either too much noise or just like false things that are like double counted. Like if you're already looking at kind of the play-by-play data, it's really, you have the danger of double counting certain aspects of StatCast. You have the danger of not accounting for sample sizes, or for just having these false assumptions. So we have looked at StatCast data. It's not really incorporated into the model because we haven't found like statistically significant use for it. But it's like one of the things that I think we all kind of, we would like to find better ways to incorporate that. But I think there's enough edge and value that you're getting from like the normal play-by-play that it's not really needed.
Yeah, and just to add to that, I think it's like, at its best, it's a good leading indicator. You know, like if a pitcher's velocity or something like that is changing. But I think that honestly, with the way that we're handling sort of like recent game sample sizes and adjusting and everything like that, that we're catching up to that fairly quickly without the risk of misinterpreting like what could be noise. So it's like, you know, at its best pure signal, it's really a leading indicator that might be a little bit faster, but there is a lot of like risks in how to handle it.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Question from Chase here that I think is a little bit more practical, like of what you'd be doing building lineups in the app. But he said, does the sim variance or any lineup building features become less effective when uploading your own projections instead of using the default ones? And even as a more general way of kind of just thinking about this question, if people are making adjustments to projections for some of the reasons we've talked about here, maybe minor league or bullpen rotations or anything like that, is there any concern that they're lowering the value of the sims or I mean, people have asked me on stream before, am I ruining the sims by coming in here and making changes?
You're not ruining the sims. I'll start out with that. I won't sugarcoat it. Like I do think that you, when you change projections and with sim variance, it makes sim variance less like accurate, I would say, just in terms of, or like less reflective of the real sim outcomes, right? Because at sim variance 10, for example, each lineup is using actual scores from the sims. If you're adjusting projections, then they're no longer using actual scores of the sims. It's using the actual scores of the sims, but then like plus or minus your kind of difference in projections. But like there's so much value to like the standard deviations and like the ranges of outcomes that come from sim variance, and you're still getting that when you adjust them. It's just you're kind of adjusting, you're like shifting over those distributions to match your new means. And so Yeah, maybe you're losing a little bit of the value of the Sims, but if you feel like you're gaining enough value from having better projections, you know, by kind of adjusting a player that you feel is like being under their mean is too low in Saber Sims projection for whatever reason. If you feel like there's kind of enough value there, and it's obviously it's hard to know like how to quantify that, but it's not like you're just ruining the Sims. You're getting a ton of value out of them. It's just you're not necessarily getting like the real like sim results in your lineups. Like when we talk about like that 0-0-10 build, where like each lineup is an optimal individual sim, you know, you're not getting that specifically, but you're still getting like, you know, 90% of the value of like sim variants, or that's just a made up number. But I don't know if Will, you agree or disagree with that, but like that's how I would describe it. It's like, yeah, you're losing a little bit of value, but like just a small amount of it.
Yeah, I think in something like baseball, it's more impactful. Whereas like in NBA, if you're bumping a player a point, like because there's one, the points they score are relatively higher. Like it's, you know, adding a point to a 3-point player is significantly different than somebody going for 50. In baseball, I think I'd almost prefer to do it at the exposures level. So it's like if I know that I wanted to bump this team, like I think SaberSim is low on the Cubs, I would rather just go bump their exposures in the post-build setting, rather than try and mess with the projections themselves.
Yeah,
But
that's
that's,
a really good point.
yeah.
Yeah, because of the way that the points come, you know, it someone with a projection of 10, it's going to be like a combination of home runs, which are worth like 14 to 20 points, and walks that are worth 2 points. And if you're like bumping that player up by 2 points, it's going to like add two to all of their results. But maybe like you actually think that they're just going to get more home runs, but the same amount of walks. And so it's hard for us to like really account for that in how we're doing those adjustments. So I think Will's right that like, and this is how I build lineups as well. It's like I much prefer to do that at the exposure level, where it's like build your lineups with Sabres and projections, and then be like, all right, I want to just like take more of like the Sims where the Cubs do well, and not necessarily adjust those Sims, but just like pull more of them into my lineups.
Interesting. And I think maybe this is a little bit of a rabbit hole, but now I'm interested. What do you think about the difference between adjusting projections versus exposures on step three? Like, is the potential risks of adjusting projections on step one still the same when you're doing that on step three after the lineups have been built, or are those two kind of roughly equivalent at that point?
So I mean, it's much different to adjust projections on step three than on step one, because if you do it on step one, then it's changing how lineups are built. On step three, it's changing how lineups are sorted. The nice thing about in step three, the nice thing about adjusting projections is that you can kind of have a better distribution of how your line, if you're like entering a bunch of different contests. Like say you have a 150 max and a 20 max. If you adjust projections, then it's like you might bring more, like say in the Cubs example, you might bring more of those Cubs stacks up to like the top of your rankings if you kind of bump all of the Cubs batter projections up. But you're not just like bringing the top 20 to the top of your list, or only bring, like if you set a max exposure cap, you know, then you might just like the last 20 lineups are don't have this player, and so if you enter them with like a unique rank fill method, then you're gonna get none of them in your 20 max, and it's gonna be this weird distribution. So I think that the benefit of doing the projection level in step three is just having a nicer distribution, and it's like if you don't know how much exposure you want, you just know like, hey, I want to like sort this team a bit higher. I want to like increase the projection of this pitcher a bit. And let's just see how that shakes out. I will personally do that, especially I think in baseball, really all sports. You know, it's just a nice way to like just see like, hey, what happens if I bump this player's up, this projection up by 3 points? Like, how is that going to impact how much they get into my lineups?
Gotcha. Cool. Well, I think this is a good opportunity to kind of start closing things out. I don't see any other questions coming in here. On the subject of the more practical side of things, I will be releasing a few videos next week as a bit of a strategy guide, a tutorial of how to use SaberSim, how to put everything we've been talking about this week together and build winning MLB DFS lineups. This video or this stream, as it is live right now, is second in our series of our baseball content that we're putting out for this season. So if you missed it, Matt and I talked a little bit more about just higher level baseball DFS strategy yesterday on stream. Had a really great conversation. Definitely recommend going back and watching that, particularly if this is one of your first couple seasons of baseball DFS or just want a general refresher on the overall strategies. But in summary, hope this was a helpful video for you all understanding what we're doing when we say that we're simulating games, why it's so valuable for DFS, and kind of a deep dive into what's actually going on play by play in the simulations. You don't have to take any of our word for it. We have a free 7-day trial on our site, sabersim.com. You can come check us out. We are now less than a week away, so you sign up today. You'd actually get access for that opening day. But free 7 days, no strings attached, so come check us out. Thanks, Matt and Will, for coming on and breaking it down for me, and looking forward to the start of the season.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
thanks for having me.
All right, thanks, guys.